You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning. It's Thursday, June 12th, and on our minds today is the internet. Is there anything, John, that should be restricted on the internet? Any of the substance, any of the songs, any of the articles? Who gets to participate in the internet, you think?
Do you want to control the internet? And if so, how? What restrictions would you put on? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. We'll read your responses. We're going to be talking about that in just a moment.
It's on our minds because of what's happening here in New York.
And when it comes to child pornography, there is no excuse. There is no excuse that can justify it. There is no excuse that this office will tolerate. It has to be stopped.
That's New York Attorney General Andrew Cuomo speaking yesterday, or Tuesday rather, about his unprecedented plan to battle online child pornography. He has persuaded big name internet service providers like Verizon, Sprint, and Time Warner Cable to block child pornography. Joining us now is Siva Vaidyanathan, an associate professor for media studies and law at the University of Virginia. Good morning, Siva. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, good morning. It's a pleasure.
Is this a good strategy?
It's a really important move. I mean, you know, child pornography is far and away the biggest problem on the internet. Most of the other problems that we hear about, things like copyright infringement, are either, you know, overreactions or simple moral panics. But child pornography, we're talking about real children getting hurt in real ways, and then a market developing around that to facilitate that and encourage that. So there really is no better example of how misbehavior and ickiness and horrible, destructive behavior gets perpetrated through the net. And it really only has two problems, this agreement between the Attorney General Cuomo's office and the internet service providers, two problems which can be summarized as, one, it won't work, so therefore it won't matter, and two, it affects content and communication far broader than child pornography. So it really misses its mark.
Okay, let's start with the first point you make. You say it won't work. Why?
Well, you have to remember that we're talking about users, consumers of child pornography and producers of child pornography. These people are obsessive, right? They're in this milieu because they're already sick, twisted, motivated. They already know they're shunned by most decent people in the world. They also are particularly adept at evading surveillance and evading any sort of attempts to block them. They've figured out long ago how to use strong encryption, how to use proxy servers, how to use all these techniques that this digital technology affords them to escape view. And basically all that this is going to do is force internet service providers to block entire groups of communication, what are known as Usenet groups. You might remember Usenet groups from back in the 20th century when people used to gather to have these sort of unregulated chats about certain subjects, whether it was the Ramones or Beverly Hills 90210, which was one of my favorite Usenet groups back in the day. Well, there are a whole lot of Usenet groups still active. And so we're not really talking about the World Wide Web as we know it. We're talking about sort of, you know, text and file distribution. And we're dealing with these internet service provider companies saying, look, New York State is asking us to do this, making us do this, and we're going to block access to lots of Usenet groups. In fact, Time Warner wants to block access to Usenet in general. So we're talking about a very broad set of blockages. Now, the basic thing is, remember back in the 90s, we all used to plug phone lines into our computers and dial in to get our content. All that child pornographers have to do then is plug in the phone line and dial in. That's just one of many techniques.
But to your point that child pornographers are far ahead of policymakers or law enforcement, so then how does law enforcement and policymakers try to attack what you say, as you say, is an insidious problem?
Yeah, unfortunately, the old-fashioned way, with hard work and steady investigation and prosecution, et cetera. And that's not to say that any of those tactics work in a widespread way. We're probably not going to solve the child pornography problem this century, but by all means, let's do it in a way that recognizes the depth of the problem and the complexity of the problem. This is a major human flaw, a major human social flaw and psychological flaw, and one that has tremendous repercussions. Let's take it very seriously as a crime.
Right. Well, let's. We're not going to solve the sort of human nature issue of child pornography, but who else is interested in these kinds of restrictions on the net should New York go ahead with this and it become a widespread phenomenon?
Well, you can see a lot of these efforts already being sort of modeled out in places like Saudi Arabia, which, of course, wants to block content far beyond child pornography. Any sort of nakedness or political dissent is blocked in similar ways in places like Saudi Arabia, in places like China. France has a much more subtle set of policies that are about to go in place that are very much like the New York policy. And, of course, they're very interested in restricting hate speech as well. So you see these efforts increasingly rolling out. And it's not to say that they're ineffective in the sense that they certainly make communication inconvenient. But remember, child pornographers are not dissuaded by inconvenience. And so what you have here is, I think, a dangerous situation where you're actually giving the impression that you're doing something about child pornography when, in fact, you're letting the problem fester and making it actually harder to investigate and prosecute the people who participate in that.
Well, you've just given us more to think about in this very complicated issue. Siva Vaidyanathan, Associate Professor for Media Studies and Law at the University of Virginia. Thank you, sir.
Anytime.
Siva, I think your next book should be Nakedness and Political Dissent. I think that's the takeaway there. Yeah.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.